Mr. President, on behalf of the American Society of Newspaper Editors, I just wanted to express our appreciation for your treatment of us in the past. You've addressed our banquets and our luncheons, and you've gone out of your way to be very kind, and we greatly appreciate this opportunity because it's the last time that we're going to meet you as president. And I'm going to take the opportunity to ask you the first question, if you'll don't mind, and that is, I wonder if you'd care to comment on your political philosophy in retiring, irrespective of any personal considerations.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You put out those lights. First, before I answer Mr. Jones's question, I'm happy to have you here. I hope you enjoyed the trip through the rehabilitated president's house and that you got to see everything you wanted to see up there. You find out, if you look closely, that you have to inquire where any changes have taken place. My only difficulty now is to find my shirts and socks, which I'll probably be able to do by the time we get ready to move out. This, by the way, for your information, is the 300th press conference which I've held since I've been President of the United States. I want to say to Mr. Jones that I've been a very close student of the presidency of the United States and also of the individual presidents who've occupied the place since Washington's time. And my reason for not running again is based on the fact that I don't think that any man, I don't care how good he is indispensable in any job. The presidency itself is a continuing office, the greatest office in the history of the world. And that office ought to be continuing as far as individuals are concerned. And another thing in connection with it, when a man has been in this very responsible position for 8 years, which I will practically have been by the 20th day of next January, he has, or should have by that time, made all the contribution that he possibly can to the welfare of the nation. He's either done it well or he's done it not well. I've tried my best to give the nation everything I had in me. There are a great many people, I expect a million in the country, could have done the job better than I did it, but I had the job and I had to do it. And I always quote one epitaph, which is on a tombstone in the cemetery at Tombstone, Arizona. And it said, "Here lies Jack Williams. He done his damnedest." I think that's the greatest epitaph that a man can have, when he gives everything that's in him to the job that he has before him. That's all you can ask of him, and that's what I've tried to do. Now I'm ready for your questions.
Salem, North Carolina, Journal and Sentinel. Mr. Newbold Morris addressed us at lunch today, said he didn't know why he had been fired. I wonder if you could tell us why.
That's a question that I will have to avoid answering. I'm sorry. If he doesn't know, why, there's no reason for my telling him.
President, I'm Harry Bingham from the Louisville Courier Journal. Would you say how you feel about the withdrawal of Governor Stevenson from the presidential race?
Well, I think Governor Stevenson is a good man, and I think he would have made a good candidate for president, but he has control of his own actions, and the only comment I can make on it is that I'm sorry he didn't go into the Democratic Convention.
In drawing up the platform of the next convention. In this this coming platform, will there be a compulsory FEPC?
I read the Democratic platform on March the 29th. If you read that speech, you know what it's going to be. Who is this over here?
I'm Lester Martell of the New York Times. Mr. President, what do you think ought to be done with ex-president?
Well, you know, on their immediate retirement, there are a lot of people would like to just put a rock around them and put them in the Potomac River right out here. But I think all ex-presidents, and I hope to be one for some time, can make a contribution to the welfare of the country. Herbert Hoover's made a contribution to the welfare of this country. He did a wonderful job for me in 1946, and he also served as chairman of the commission which went into the reorganization of the government. I think every man who has held this position accumulates knowledge that ought to be available for the whole country. And I expect to do whatever I'm asked to do, just like these people have done for me while I've been president. Comment on that.
I may, in fact, were at the council bus in Anchorage. You were over our town yesterday, and I wonder if you would like to say what you think we can do to avoid another catastrophe such as facing us now.
Back in 1926, General Pick and I, he then was the engineer for the Missouri River stationed at Kansas City, went into the flood situation from the headwaters of the Missouri and the headwaters of the Mississippi to Cairo, Illinois. General Pick at that time began to work on a plan, particularly a plan for the Missouri River Basin as a whole. It drains, I believe he told us yesterday, some 600,000 square miles. He finally came up with a plan, a compromise plan it was. He and Mr. Sloan came along with a plan, and we've been trying to implement that plan. It hasn't been with very much energy or with very much promptness that that plan has been implemented. Had that plan been completed, I mean the whole thing, which affects all the small rivers as well as the Missouri itself, I think last year's disaster and this one too could have been avoided. It seems that this country has a peculiar complex. They never take things that might happen and try to do something about them before they happen. They always have to be in the midst of a disaster before they go to work to do what ought to be done to meet the situation. I've had exactly the same trouble with the National Defense Program. I hope there'll be no letdown on the National Defense Program, and I hope we can finish this preliminary program for those big rivers out there in the Middle West, because that's the breadbasket of the nation, as I said yesterday. And we ought to take care of it. Had it not been for that breadbasket working full steam ahead during the Second World War, we could have lost the war. And that means something to the world and to us. And I'm sorry that it takes something like such as happened on the lower Missouri last year, and such as has happened on the upper Missouri this year and the upper Mississippi this year, to wake people up to the fact that something ought to be done to meet these situations, and they can be met.
Ray McConnell of the Lincoln, Nebraska Journal. In urging an overall program for the Missouri Basin breadbasket, do you mean to include, in addition to the Pick-Sloan plan, the Department of Agriculture plans for proper land management, conservation, and small watershed treatment?
It all goes together.
And a second part of this question, sir. In saying at Omaha that the governors should join you in getting action now and should stop fooling around, did you mean to imply abandonment of the policy by which, since the outbreak of the Korean War, the Budget Bureau has encountered several millions of dollars of appropriated
funds? It had no connection with that whatever. we've had in the Missouri Valley, there are 9 governors, I believe it's 9 or 11, that are affected by this flood control plan, and most of them have been dragging their feet for the last 25 years. And I just want to pick their feet up off the ground and help me to get started on a plan, but that has no relationship whatever with the budget. Please ask that question again. I couldn't hear
you. You stated that your major contribution of your administration was the prevention of World War III. Would you care to comment as to what you feel has been the greatest contribution of your administration on the domestic front?
Yes, I'll be glad to comment on that, for I think it is equally as great a contribution. We've been able to keep employment at full tilt. We've been able to fix the income of the country so that it's fairly distributed. The farmers are in better shape than they've ever been before. You gave me a chance now to make a political speech. Labor is in better shape than it's ever been before, and so is management and industry. They never had such glowing times as they've had over the last five or 6 years. I think that's the greatest contribution I've made to the domestic situation. An even economy, well balanced, so that everybody has a fair chance. The paramount issue of the 1952 election is the defense program to keep peace in the world and to keep this economy of ours on an even keel. They all go together. One fails, they'll all fail.
Do you think the economy can be kept on that even keel without the rearmament program?
Yes, of course I do. When the rearmament program's finished, if we can go ahead with the improvement of the underdeveloped areas of the world and even raise the standard of living of the underdeveloped countries in this world, at least 2%, our production machine can never stop in the next 25 years.
I don't want to seem to be ridiculous, but a certain news agency sent a story down to North Carolina the day that affected the rumor going around Washington that you were coming to the University of North Carolina to teach history. Do you have any comments?
Well, sir, I'll tell you something about that. I'm no historian. I have no college degrees except the honorary ones that they've given me since I've been in the Senate and President of the United States, and I don't believe there's any college in the country would consider me qualified to teach history or anything.
Arthur Burrow, St. Joseph, Missouri News Press.
I know you.
In view of what you have said, you know, of course, that Walter Williams, president, late president of Missouri University, never had a college degree except an honorary one. There has been much talk in Missouri of offering the presidency to the present governor of Missouri, your friend, Forrest Smith. Would you consider the presidency of the University of Missouri?
I don't think I don't think you Republican editor of that St. Joseph paper ought to come down here and try to undercut my Democratic governor.
If you can seize the steel mills on your inherent powers, can you, in your opinion, also seize the newspapers, power, and the radio station?
Under similar circumstances, the President of the United States has to act for whatever's for the best of the country. That's the answer to your question.
Vanderbilt, Birmingham News. You spoke of 8 years as being a limit for one man in the presidency.
It's constitutional.
Do you think that there is any limit for one party remaining continuously in power?
No, I don't, as long as that party makes the country work for the most people and their benefit.
That party can stay in power as long as they can do that. I do have some ideas about, since the president's limited by constitutional amendment to 2 terms, doesn't affect me, however, but I think it's ethical that I should recognize it. I think there are some other limitations on terms in government that would be very helpful to the welfare of the country.